started. We'll call this meeting to order. Looks like we have all of our members, so I don't know. I don't know that we need introductions. We did that the last time, which would then take us to review and approval of the March 2021 summary notes. So are there any comments, questions, or I'll entertain a motion to approve.
I make a motion to approve the summary notes from our April 24th meeting.
Okay, do I have a second?
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we approve the summary notes from our April meeting. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries. Excellent. And all right, well, that takes us into...
Who is the second on that? I'm just trying to keep up on my notes here.
Oh, sorry.
You guys are moving.
My apologies, Lance. I've ran some pretty big meetings, so I tend to go a little fast. And I tell you that as a group, if I get going too fast, you better slow me down, and I apologize.
I got motion by Kim and second by...
Who seconded the minutes?
Oh, got it. Okay. Thank you, Chris.
Okay. With that, we'll move to our business items. And Lance, I'll turn it over to you. Item A is the Willamette Falls Drive Concept Plan presentation.
Thank you, members of the Transportation Advisory Board. One of the tasks of the TAB is the ongoing maintenance and any updates to our transportation system plan. The TSP was adopted in 2016, and we've had a couple of updates to the TSP since the adoption of the full update of the document. For tonight's meeting, we have our consulting team members, Mark Petorek and Nick Lenski from Kittleson Associates, who have been working with us on the Willamette Falls Drive concept plan. They have a presentation ready and prepared for you tonight to review a lot of that work. It's been going on for some time. I think their presentation may include some details on dates and stuff like that. So I will turn it over to them to go through the presentation, and then we'll be able to entertain any questions or comments from the group, as well as any potential recommendation that the group may have on the concept plan moving forward to the City Council. I'd also note that the Planning Commission is reviewing this concept plan basically in parallel with the Transportation Advisory Board. I believe at their last meeting, they just made a couple of comments and then moved to have it forwarded to the City Council with their recommendation of approval. So with that, I turn it over to Mark and Nick.
Great. I'll just do a quick intro as Nick gets the presentation up. Good evening, advisory board members. I believe you'll see some of this presentation tonight we had given to you previously, and I believe it's all the same membership, but we'll go through it relatively at a good clip and then answer any questions that you might have. And with that, Nick, you want to take it from there?
Is that letting you share, Nick?
Sorry, I shared my screen too fast before I hit unmute. Yeah, I'll take it just a sec. Can you see that okay?
Nothing yet.
Okay. No, not yet.
Okay. Take three.
There you go. Or start, it's trying.
Yep. How's that?
Yep.
Okay, yep, perfect. Thanks, Mark. Like Mark said, we just wanted to give you kind of a quick update on where the concept plan is currently at, and then go over the main components of really the overall project as a whole. So just a quick we don't have to do introductions as we talked about at the beginning, but then I'll just quickly walk through the current concept plan timeline and what we've done to date for the project, and then what we're looking forward to in the future. And then I will just do a segment by segment walkthrough of the overall concept plan, as there's kind of five key segments on the project. And then you can stop me throughout this if you have any questions, but we can do questions at the end as well. So where we're at right now, at least with the main involvement with the concept plan, started back at the beginning of 2019. Lance and the Public Works Department had a few open houses with some neighborhood associations in the area. And then slowly we started working towards more public facing pieces of it within a public open house in August of 2019. And then going through the end of 2019, we were picking up steam, and then, you know, just like everything else, there's kind of a big global pandemic. Maybe you've heard of it. But then towards the throughout last year, we actually worked through so September of 2020 through April of this year, we've been coordinating a lot with the old mill site development area, as there's a lot of the project that goes through that large development site. And we've been coordinating with them to see what we can do to best facilitate development for their property, as well as how we can make the concept plan work for the city and the adjacent area as best we can. And then earlier in April, we had a work session with the Planning Commission. And then just last week, we had, like Lance said, the public hearing with the Planning Commission, where they moved to pass this along to the actual city council and have a public hearing for that. But then tonight we're here for a second work session with the TAB.
Go ahead. Nicholas or Nick?
Nick is perfect.
Okay, thanks, Nick. So we were at kind of about 30% in late 19 or early 20, and we're still at about 30% design level, just kind of refining that concept.
Yeah, we're probably at the 15 to 30% concept level at this point. But yeah, we're still at the same spot.
Okay, thanks.
Yep, no problem. And then this is the overall project area that we're looking at. So like I said, there's kind of five key segments, the A, B, C, and D on the screen. There's a piece in the middle, the historic Willamette Falls Drive area, that obviously just is finishing up construction right now. So that's not included as part of the design concept in the concept plan. There are pieces of what the project is that was just constructed, as well as what phase two of that can look like, that is included in the detailed figure documents in the overall concept plan. But segment A is from the Tualatin River along Willamette Falls Drive to 16th Street, coming to the west end of downtown. And then segment B jumps across downtown to 10th Street and goes to 6th Street. And then segment C goes from 6th Street all the way to Sunset Avenue. So that's probably the largest segment of the project from a lineal foot perspective. And then segments D and E are the largest change to the corridor, and it's a full roadway reconfiguration through the old mill site development that I spoke a little bit about earlier. So we always just want to highlight kind of what the overall concept plan is trying to achieve. And this is just a chart showing kind of the different levels of confidence when it comes to cycling and both bicycles and pedestrians. But traditionally, a lot of roadways are kind of designed for the somewhat confident, highly confident users, whereas we are really trying to make this a family-friendly bike and ped zone for all users. And so we're really, really focusing on this interested but concerned party. And a lot of the design really goes into detail to focus on that user group. So like I said, segment A starts at the west end at the Tualatin River and goes through, passes Osman is the main intersection in the middle of this, and then hits 16th Street at the east end. So this segment is primarily residential and includes properties along both sides of Willamette Falls Drive. And then we are in this area providing continuous access for bicycles and pedestrians along this portion of the corridor. And it was really key to provide that continuous access on both sides, just because there's Fields Bridge Park at the far east end, the far west end. And then there's also, as I'm sure you've heard, there's a new school development happening in between Dollar Street and Willamette Falls Drive, right up against the rivers right there. So this is generally what the section looks like. We actually, this is an older figure, the parking. This is if you're looking kind of up along towards the east along Willamette Falls Drive. The parking is actually, it primarily going to be on the opposite side of the road now. It's going to be adjacent to the park when it is present. It's not there for the whole duration of this segment of the project. The following updates are proposed as part of this section. So there's a sidewalk and a separated bike lane on both sides of the roadway with a buffer strip where we could. There are constrained portions of this section where we omitted the buffer strip but maintained the bicycle path and the sidewalk on both sides throughout all the way to downtown. And then there will be key intersection improvements, like I said, at Osman and then at either end of the corridor, taking into account safety. And that all will be super refined at a later stage in the project. We have gone into a decent detail and shown on the, if you haven't looked at the full concept plan document, we have detailed a lot of what the intersection improvements can look like, but those will be refined at a later stage in the design. And then we are widening, like I said, the road near Fields Bridge Park to accommodate for additional parking near the park. And then this is just kind of a very schematic representation of what the roadway could look like. We actually shared these figures at the public open house back in August of 2019. So the figure on the left is what Willamette Falls Drive looks like right next to Fields Bridge Park today. And then the figure on the right is what it could look like, adding all the new features of the corridor with the sidewalk and the separated bike path on both sides of the road. Segment B is a little less drastic of a change. This portion of Willamette Falls Drive is also primarily residential, but there are commercial properties located on the north side of the road. The western limits, again, are at 10th Street, so the end of the downtown project that was just constructed and goes to the east to 6th Street. So through this segment, the existing frontage road, all shown as Willamette Falls Drive to the south of the bigger Willamette Falls Drive in the figure, that will actually be utilized as the bicycle route through this segment. So there will be new share road and shared pavement marking placed on the existing frontage road that bikes will then use to have a safer, more comfortable ride than using the existing just kind of small two-lane roadway that is Willamette Falls Drive right now. And then there's an existing shared use path on the north side of the road that doesn't quite extend all the way through this segment, and that would also be fully constructed as part of this proposed concept. So this is what the segment can theoretically look like. So the two travel lanes down kind of in the middle of the two other significantly grade separated pieces here, that's the existing Willamette Falls Drive roadway. And then on the far right of the figure is that frontage road. You can see that there's the shared pavement markings in the roadway. And that's just a way to utilize space in an area that has some significant vegetation in between the existing roadway and the frontage road. And then the path down on the left-hand side of the screen would also be constructed and completed to provide a continuous access both on the north and the south side of Willamette Falls Drive through this segment. So again, this one is pretty subdued compared to the other one. The existing roadway stays in its same spot and vehicles would be using the same roadway that they do today. And then you can see a bicyclist on the right-hand side of the screen that would be using that road as their frontage road. So they would, if you're going along from the picture point of view to the east, bicycles would just swing around onto the frontage road and then continue on the frontage road. And then comes to the longest segment of the project. So segment C provides the most difficult grade challenges along the corridor. So there's a steep rock face that connects to I-205 on the north side of the road. And then there's a steep fill slope on the south side of the road. So with these significant grade challenges, the thought process here was to provide a constrained section that still maintains access for all of the users that we've identified need this access on this road. So what we actually went with is a shared use path on the south side of the road for this segment, just with the minimal properties and access points on the north side of the road. It made sense to put this on the south side of the road, and there isn't a need to have people cross back and forth through this segment. So this is what this segment looks like. Pretty small compared to that first one again. So it's just got the two travel lanes maintained pretty much in the existing alignment. There are some small shifts along the way where we could utilize the grades to our advantage. But then the shared use path would be on the south side of the road. And this would be for pedestrians and bicyclists. And this would continue from 6th Street at the west side all the way to the Sunset intersection at the east. So this is right in front. Oh,
go ahead. What's the path width?
The path width is 10 feet through this section, and then we do bump it out to 12 feet where we can, but there are some great challenges to, we don't go any less than 10 feet.
Great, thanks.
Yep. So this is over by the old bus barn or the recycling center. I forget which one this is in the picture. But generally, this is what the roadway stays in the same spot. And then again, where we can, we provide this buffer planter strip. But then if grades become an issue, that's the first thing to go rather than reduce the width of the shared use path. So now we get into segments D and E. And like I said, this is the most drastic of the changes on the project. So the dashed red line on the screen represents the changes that could happen to the alignment of the roadway from a vehicle standpoint. So segment D will follow a slightly updated alignment of Sunset Avenue and will provide pedestrian facilities on both sides of the road and will utilize the south side of the road to provide a two-way separated bicycle facility. And this is again due to the steep topography. It made sense to try and keep the bicycle users on the south side of the road as we have more flexibility to widen on the fill side of things, so the downhill side of things, rather than cut into the extreme rock face that is on the north side of the road. So through this section, there will be, since we're introducing some new intersection improvements, the center turn lane is only there when we need it from a volume perspective based on the turning and traffic analysis. But through this section, we will provide a lane in each direction for vehicles and then sidewalks on both sides of the road. And we reintroduce the sidewalk on the north side of the road through this segment just because there are more properties and more access points on the north side of the road. So it's important to continue pedestrian access on both sides. And then you can see there's a separated two-way bicycle facility through this portion. Again, to try and utilize, and this is using the topographic survey that we have, you can see that on the left-hand side of the screen is that steep rock face, whereas we can gradually grade out the right-hand side through a lot more of the project segment. And then this is this one is a hard one to really get a before and after image, just because the whole road is moving through different areas. So this is the existing Sunset alignment as you come down from that kind of really here the up here on the left. This is as you're coming down that Sunset Avenue intersection is what we're looking at on the left-hand side of the screen. And then on the right-hand side of the screen, this is just more of a general condition of what it could look like when we have all of the elements present. So with the center turn lane and then sidewalks and the two-way separated bike track. And then the last segment, this is from West A Street to the intersection down with OR 43. So segment E will rework the roadway configuration through the existing mill site to provide continuous transportation flow for all modes of transportation through the area. The southern two-way bicycle facility will be maintained through this segment as well, and continuous sidewalks will be on both sides of the road. There will also be a new roundabout at the intersection, highlighted by the at the end of where the red line connects to OR 43, and that's in tandem with the I-205 widening project that ODOT is designing right now, that will turn both of the current terminal intersections of the interchange to be roundabouts. So it's just to have that be one more cohesive element of that project. So through this section, and this is still in development as far as what it can actually look like, and we're working, like I said, with the developers on the old mill site to really fine tune this as they figure out what they want to do for development as well. But this is an option to have parallel parking on both sides of the road. What will most likely happen is parallel parking on one side of the road or diagonal parking on one side of the road. And then sidewalks on both sides, and then maintaining the two-way separated bike facility. And then just wanted to give a big picture of kind of what all this can look like through this area, as it's probably the biggest change in the area. So we tried to use as much of the existing roadway to again help us with grades through this as we could. So if you're coming from the west and you come up to the intersection at Sunset, you would then use this Sunset Bridge is realigned. Again, this is part of the I-205 widening project. So to get some additional width on the freeway itself, the bridge abutment for this piece of the bridge would need to be relocated, just to provide adequate width and clearance for vehicles going underneath the structure. And then as you go further to the west, there would be a free flow movement for the folks on Sunset, and then a stop movement for the people coming down on West A Street. Left turn lanes are provided for all movements in every direction, just to make sure that there's not unnecessary stop and congestion in through this area. And then you come down, and then this is actually right here on the corner would be is currently the proposed access to the development property. This probably will move, but it's just the current location identified. And then as you come further towards OR 43, this is a connection to the existing Territorial Drive. It's a steep roadway today, and it maintains that steep functionality through this. And we have done a lot of profile reviews of what this roadway can look like, and we feel pretty comfortable that this can achieve everything that we want to while still providing the multimodal connection that we're looking for through this area. And then the biggest piece is as you get down to OR 43, this new multi-lane roundabout that ties into the ODOT project coming off of I-205. So, and then I just wanted to highlight some of the, like I'd mentioned, the I-205 corridor widening project. So that's it's ongoing by ODOT. There's a lot of different pieces and a lot of moving pieces to that project. But it's being moved forward through design. I think they are starting part of construction, at the beginning of next year. But I think it's just small pieces of it. And then there's the old mill site development project that's just wrapping up construction down in the historic downtown area. The old mill site development is the property that we've been coordinating with, just using the roadway realignment that we just went over. And then the historic Willamette Falls Drive project, both phases 1 and 2 are the historic project down between 16th and 10th in the downtown area. And then there's also an Oregon City joint project with West Lynn and ODOT to do a conceptual design of a bike and pedestrian bridge from Oregon City to the city of Westland. And I kind of breezed through that, but that is the overview of our work to date. And then the full conceptual design plan is available on the city's website. If you haven't taken a look at it, I would encourage you to do so, and happy to answer any questions.
Thanks for the overview, Nick. This is I'm new to the committee, so this is I've glanced at the plan on the website, but this is the first presentation I've sat in, so appreciate you going through that. I do have just kind of some general questions. I don't want to monopolize everybody's time, so I don't know if other folks have questions as well.
Why don't you proceed, Evan, and we'll see how it goes.
Sounds great. Thanks, Greg. On the segment D items is Broadway Bridge. It looks like that's separate from this project. Did you actually show the plan view schematic?
Sure.
I found that one to be that pretty nice. Is Broadway Bridge going to remain, or is that going?
The Broadway Bridge would be removed as part of the I-205 corridor widening project. Where the abutment is directly where they're planning to put the new exit ramp from the freeway.
Sure. Okay. Do we have the ability to coordinate with ODOT on the Sunset Avenue Bridge and get that in a location alignment and I guess width to be what we want for this project?
So I can answer that, Evan. Yeah, the city is in coordination with ODOT on all of the I-205 improvements and plans. The schedule, the tentative schedule for I-205 is to start what ODOT calls phase 1A next year in construction. Phase 1A is from Highway 43 to 99E, and basically the bridge of Abernathy, the bridge over the Willamette River, and the attached on and off ramps. So from McLaughlin to 43, and includes the one roundabout at the on and off ramp at 43 and I-205. So that starts next year, but the bridge is a multi-year project. So phase 1A will actually be under construction for probably 5 years. And we're anticipating that the roundabout will probably arrive in 2023 or 2024, depending on their schedule. So that's one project, and that project has funding now allocated to it from the state legislature. The next projects are other phases of this section. Phase 1B is the section from 99E to 213, where they're doing some widening there to coordinate with the bridge and paving. It's a relatively small segment. I anticipate that segment will probably get funding and start construction while the bridge is under construction. So you may see that actually happening almost simultaneously with this work as they proceed with bridge construction. But that segment's dependent, obviously, on allocation of funds by the state legislature. Then the next phases are this phase from Sunset Avenue Bridge to Highway 43. That phase does not have construction funding yet. So that phase would be the construction of the reconstruction of the Sunset Avenue Bridge, the reconstruction of the West A Street Bridge, and the demolition of the Broadway Bridge. We don't know exactly when that will get built, but we know that ODOT and the state legislature and OTC is working on it. The next phase after that would really be from Sunset to 10th Street and getting that portion constructed and widened. And then future phases would be from 10th Street to Stafford, which is, I think, a longer term future looking phase of the 205 project. So basically ODOT's goal is to sort of bust up the 205 work into smaller packages so that they can get more diverse bidding and effort, and then trickle funding to the project as funding becomes available. In this case, our project really is working at how we overlay with that. And one of the things that you keyed right in on that I think a lot of people have questions about is the existing alignment of Willamette Falls Drive and how those roundabouts would work. ODOT has modeled all of that already with their consultant team and have determined that those dual roundabouts are the best solution long-term for this area. And to get the roundabout in at Willamette Falls Drive, which in this case would be realigned and renamed as Sunset Avenue, the old Willamette Falls Drive alignment really won't work because it's too steep to accommodate the roundabout. And so what's not shown in this plan is the retaining wall that would actually have to be built between the little cul-de-sac that we're showing there to serve those existing lots along Broadway in Willamette Falls Drive, and the retaining wall that would step down to the lower lower roundabout that would marry in with the existing arch bridge. So a lot of topographic challenges in this area to get all this to work and try and efficiently meet the needs of the location, and then also meet the needs of the waterfront plan, which is the developed area, as well as still provide access to the existing mill operations that are still continuing in this area, provide access to the LOX and the PGE facility on the island, and also access to the PGE industrial and mill industrial sites further along on Willamette Falls Drive. So a big knot here to try and untie and make work in the long term.
Sure. Evan, did you have other questions?
Yeah, so I was pretty personally interested in this because I live right off of Sunset, right where it cuts off there, and I've sat through the hour-long backups just to get to Willamette Falls Drive. I was just curious about this Sunset Avenue bridge that needs to be demolished, apparently. Was that because of the same grading issue that you mentioned? It was just too steep, and that's what was going on further down, or is there a different reason that needs to go?
Yeah, so all the bridges, both West A, Sunset, and Broadway, as well as the Abernathy Bridge, none of them meet the seismic resiliency standards to facilitate a major earthquake. The I-205 corridor is deemed the corridor in a massive earthquake. And so all of these bridges are getting rebuilt to accommodate a seismic Cascadia event, basically a 9.0 earthquake. So each one is mainly getting rebuilt for that purpose. The realignments are occurring so that we can maintain traffic and access through construction, as well as provide the grading changes for the widened I-205 corridors. So like in the case of the Sunset Avenue corridor, it's grading and width. So the existing abutments are too close to the travel lanes on I-205 to keep the alignment exactly the same. So they're actually shifting that so that we can maintain traffic through construction and simultaneously widen that bridge to accommodate three lanes instead of two lanes on I-205.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Other questions? Lance, I have one. So we know that ODOT's going to build the one roundabout at the exit off of I-205. How does then the current intersection work with that one roundabout? In other words, now at least you have a traffic circle that will stop traffic, so you have a chance without the signal now. So did the modeling show what happens, because maybe years before we build our roundabout?
So the modeling shows that I haven't gone into that in deep detail, but my understanding is that with the roundabout at the on and off ramp at I-205, there will be no ramp metering on the on ramp for Highway 43 to I-205 because of the roundabout. So traffic should move much smoother through that location. However, like you mentioned, during peak hours and peak backups, there's a big backup on Willamette Falls Drive, and there's very few gaps except at the traffic signal timing switches for traffic to enter and exit to Willamette Falls Drive as it currently exists. So to be, I think, sort of blunt on your question, there will be more backups and more traffic on Willamette Falls Drive in the interim because there will be fewer gaps. Now, does that mean that fewer people will exit in advance of this location because Waze will see that there's a backup and keep people on the freeway versus, you know, diverting them to Willamette Falls Drive? That has yet to be seen. Obviously, we'll see it when we see it. But in general, I would say expect continued delays on Willamette Falls Drive until the roundabout is built, the second roundabout is built. Mm-hmm. There is a potential that this project could move forward with a variety of funding mechanisms where we may see this move sort of in parallel or close to the target timeline for the roundabout on 43. But that is a very keen observation and something that the council should be very aware of moving forward, that it will be difficult during peak hours to enter and exit on Willamette Falls Drive.
Is it possible to build the roundabout by itself, leaving the current Willamette Fall? I know it doesn't work because it's steep, etc., but if you can't build the rest of it, can you build the roundabout with Willamette Falls Drive as it exists today?
I think to build the second roundabout on 43, you would really have to construct up to that, what we're showing as the West A Street Sunset intersection at a minimum, just to do that, you know, that segment, so to speak. So it really gets into breaking up the project into constructible sections and what makes sense. But that would definitely be the next piece. And is shown here in this picture, the only significant property take in this entire corridor is the existing gas station at that intersection next to the old city hall, old police station. So that would be a major acquisition for the project.
Other questions?
Is there any chance that this segment for our project could be constructed in the same package as ODOT's Highway 43 to Sunset Avenue?
There's always, I think, a chance. There's no chance of having this included in the 1A package that is the I-205 bridge package with the one roundabout. but I think there's certainly potential for including it with the future phase of ODOT's work, or even independently of that future phase. So each of these locations were coordinated with ODOT so that any one of our pieces could be built either simultaneously with ODOT's work or in advance of or behind ODOT's work. So there was a lot of coordination that went on to strategize that, because we never, I mean, even when we were developing this in 2019, we never knew if ODOT was going to get funding for I-205 or not.
Yeah.
So, you know, it is a big jigsaw puzzle to push this all together.
Do we have any mechanism to have that this work be in the same contract as the I-205 segment there?
Yeah, there's a mechanism for that. We're actually partnering with ODOT in the 1A package on the bridge for our waterline replacement across the bridge, and that will be part of their package. There's certainly mechanisms for that. It's just really a matter of funding and where does the money come from.
And the fact is, we don't have money for any of this, right, Lance?
Correct. There is no identified construction funding for any of this work as of today.
I have a question.
Kim, I think
yes,
that was you.
On this model, I know in the preliminary design that this was done before the tolling project came in. So is this model run as the freeway is now, or are these traffic models being run with tolling diversion?
All the traffic models are pre-COVID traffic models that show the peak prior to COVID. The tolling effort, they would actually have to go through in their process a review of diversion and diversion mitigation to make sure that any tolling effort would not adversely impact the surrounding area beyond pre-tolling condition. So there's a whole nother layer of tolling work, which is why I don't anticipate seeing any tolling for several years while they go through that process.
Other questions?
Does ODOT pay for the second roundabout?
No.
Okay. Only if they get money earmarked for them, the legislature, to do so, and the legislature hasn't seen any appetite to fund improvements on Highway 43. So I doubt we see any state funds for those kinds of improvements. There are options, or potential, I think, options for regional funds. 43 was included in the Metro Transportation Bond package that did not pass voter approval last year. And I think that package did not pass voter approval because of the additional income tax issues surrounding that. Metro is re-looking at that and might bring something forward in the future for those transportation projects, including 43. There's also future what's called RFFA grant funds, which are federal congestion mitigation grants. This project would qualify for those kinds of funds. But of course, there's competing regional interests for those funds, and there's always more projects than there are funds available. So I think we have had some success in getting those grant funds in the past. Currently working with ODOT right now on the 43 and Hidden Springs area with grant funding for that, largely due to the concept plan work that was done on Highway 43 and approved and adopted in the past in the city's transportation system plan. So this is a next logical step to get this concept plan approved and then start chasing some of those regional funding dollars for a project like this.
Kevin, you have your hand up, or you still have? Do you have a question, or is that from your previous one?
That's going to be from my previous one. Let me turn that down.
Okay.
Back on now.
Yeah, no problem. Right. I just want to make sure. Lance, or actually, I think Nick, on your concept in section D, you talk about there being some parking along the Fields Bridge Park. But the picture you showed didn't show any parking. So is that just because you didn't say it would be continuous anyway? You just said there would be some.
Right. Yeah. So this is kind of what I was getting at. Right next to Fields Bridge Park. This was a previous iteration of this concept where we had it on the north side of Willamette Falls Drive, but now it actually is shown on the south side. I can actually pull up the figure in the concept plan that shows a more accurate representation of what that looks like. Sorry.
Yeah, and of course, in the actual document, there's plan sheet sort of views of each, the entire corridor at the 1 inch equals 50 scale.
Okay.
Yeah, so it would just be for this, the duration of the park frontage that we have. And there are some other spot locations through this first segment that we've identified some parallel parking locations.
And the city council has already, in anticipation of this work, has, in timing to get on the November ballot, has already approved including impacts to Fields Bridge Park on the November ballot. As some of you may or may not be aware, the city charter requires any park impacts to go to a vote of the community. So in this case, there is some, all the improvements are actually in the existing right-of-way, but there's grading work that would impact and driveway work that would impact the park. And so that would have to go to the voters for approval.
That was my follow-up question, so thank you for that. Any other questions? I have one other, Lance. My wife got a neighborhood, whatever they call that thing, where the neighbors write in, and anyways, an individual, I guess, lives in West Lynn, expressed concern over Section A and the road going in and got closer to the river and cutting the neighborhood in half. So have you had that question? Has it been addressed, or are you familiar with what I'm talking about, or...
Is it in this section close to the park or closer to...
No, it's in Section A. I'm sorry, I've jumped back. Isn't it Section A, the one by the roundabouts?
Oh, by close to the Arch Bridge?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was a discussion item. And Nick, maybe flip on this, you know, that gives us a little more detail to that area. But, yeah, that was actually an area that was worked out in great detail with the property owner, and finding a balance between access to the river, access to their property for future redevelopment, access to the mill, access to territorial, and accommodating all those different functions. So... the property owner that's directly impacted is in full support of the alignment, and has written a letter and attended the Plan Commission meeting in support of what you see before you tonight. I think they fully recognize that they're going to need these kinds of improvements to do the kind of redevelopment they're looking to do on this site, including access to the river and riverfront trails and you know, just a whole variety of things. So, you know, I think we've reached out to them. We've also reached out to the adjacent property owners, and certainly can continue that conversation with them to help them better understand the details of what's going on. So hopefully we've addressed those concerns.
I've got a...
All right, any other questions? Who's
it? I've got a couple more. Okay. Let's see. I'm not going to ask that question. That's getting too far into design. For the folks that don't know me, I design transportation infrastructure for a living, so I don't want to get into the design stuff because that's not my job here. Does the project team believe that this concept can be carried out and meet ADA requirements?
Yeah, it'll be a challenge, but we would definitely work through any and all ADA concerns with the project. I mean, we're currently working on a more, like Lance was saying earlier, on the OR43 project we're working on with ODOT right now. We have similar topography challenges with ADA concerns, especially with this kind of separated bike facility design. Yeah. And there are challenges, but we are coming up with solutions, and it's working pretty well in that project. So we would directly translate those to this one.
Yeah, and actually the work already, that we're experiencing with the challenges that we're experiencing right now on Willamette Falls Drive in the Main Street corridor and the historic corridor is giving us a lot of insights into how to improve and refine these designs. You know, one of the things that's interesting, I think, about all of these corridors and all these projects in the city's transportation system plan is the focus on, a Vision Zero focus, safer bike facilities where we're not putting bicyclists out, in competition with semis and truck traffic. But, of course, the challenge with that is then those bikes are in closer coordination with pedestrian facilities. And so running those two in parallel presents a whole new set of unique challenges as well as ADA issues. And so, and of course, Westland is so topographically challenged and steep that alone has another layer of ADA challenge. So, it's hard to design an 8% ADA ramp on a 12% roadway. So, or a 16% roadway. So, any of the engineers in the room are, understand what I'm talking about, but for the general public, those are sort of the things that we're working through. And I think the work that we've already done and the work like that Nick mentioned on 43 in coordination with ODOT is informing all of that and allowing us to continue to refine and improve. And quite honestly, we are sort of the test case and model for the state. ODOT has actually included the Highway 43 work in their new blueprint for urban design manual, where we are sort of out front in this effort because we're so focused on life safety for bikes and peds.
Before long, we'll have to reduce those conflicts, start to design a separation for what, hoverboards, electric scooters.
Yeah, the electric scooters we definitely know are coming. They sort of took a break in COVID, but we know they'll be back in force, and we'll probably see those out here in the suburbs in the next couple of years.
Okay. So my last question is there a conceptual cost estimate?
There is, yeah. It's included at the back end of the document, and it's broken down for each segment. Okay. I can pull it up really quick if you're interested, but it's just each segment has a cost, both an approximate construction cost and then an approximate right-of-way cost associated with it at this 15 to 30% concept level.
Yeah.
And then those...
Is that about $35 million?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
And those will be adopted and implemented and added to the transportation system plan as part of this update. And of course, okay. I always tell people these are what we consider our local cost estimates, not federal aid cost estimates. what we found with any ODOT project where ODOT's involved with federal funds, you can expect those costs to double or triple just because of their process.
I can attest to that.
Any more questions, or are we ready to make a motion to recommend this plan to the city council?
So moved.
Who did, is that you, Evan?
Yeah.
Okay, is there a second motion? Second to the motion?
I second.
Kim? All right, so Evan moved, Kim seconded that we recommend to the city council the Willamette Falls Drive concept plan. Any further discussion? Okay, hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Okay, Lance, there you go. We think it's, I mean, if we could come up with $35 million, it'd be a great idea. At least you'll be able to get developers to start doing their part of the plan as they go along. And I'm sure that the waterfront development will have to do significant improvement to meet their traffic needs to get in and out of that place. So that'll be something. Okay. Thank you very much to Nick and Mark, and you can either stay and listen to this riveting conversation or leave us here, and we'll move on to the draft transportation CIP list.
Thanks, guys.
All right, have a nice evening.
Thanks, everybody.
So
Lance, take it away.
Sure. Attached, I believe it should have been attached to your advisory board meeting agenda, but it's also available on the city council, or sorry, on the city's website. Do you guys have a copy of the streets capital improvement project list?
Yeah, it was attached with our agenda.
Sure. So
I printed out a copy anyway. I don't know if anyone else did.
So that's the streets portion. It's part of the city's bigger multi-year capital improvement plan. Actually, I think I have at my fingertips an old version of this. I don't know if you guys can see this on the screen, but the city will print and publish what you see in a tabular form into a actual bound document that we approve, this council will approve as part of its budget. And I wanted to share that with you. That's already been largely through and vetted through the city's budget committee, which includes the full city council as well as a number of volunteer community members in review of the budget. In this capital improvement projects list, you'll see planned projects over the next 5 years. The spreadsheet sort of shows you a basic caption of the project name, source of funding for the project, as well as whether it is funded or not funded. And you'll see also a number of the larger capital projects not funded. And sort of pushed out to future years. And then anything that we already have identified funding for included in this five-year plan. And then basically a snapshot of when we anticipate those projects moving forward in each fiscal year. Of course, projects can shift in fiscal year as budgets are approved and adopted by council. The next biennial budget is moving, I think it actually is approved now by council and moving forward for the FY22-23 fiscal years. And so that's just sort of gives you sort of a flavor of where our money is going. In funded projects, you'll see some funds moving to match grant funds in the Highway 43 project that I previously mentioned. You'll see some funds going to some landscape improvements, some a lot or most of the funds going to pavement maintenance in existing streets. The landscape work is actually replacing street trees that we lost in medians in the recent ice storm. There's also some ADA improvements, which is mainly the intersection handicap ramps at existing street intersections, where we try and allocate funds each year to doing basic handicap ramp improvements. And then some of our bond funded projects, as well as matching some of those existing projects with some system development charges that we collect from developers that also contribute to some of those basic projects. So bond funded projects are pretty much the largest category. We tend to show all of those bond funded projects funded in the current biennium, but with staff and right of way and other competing needs, staff time, as well as consulting issues and utility issues, odds are some of those bond funded projects will likely drift out into the FY24 and possibly even 25 time frames. So with that, happy to answer any questions.
Does the current kind of total amount of bond funded projects, does that kind of tap the bonds?
Yes. So everything that you see there would basically empty out the bond allocations. And of course, all allocations are subject to review and approval by City Council, and they can shift funds from one sort of area to another as dictated by the bond measure. Quite a bit of flexibility, actually, in the bond funds.
Any questions on the CIP? I notice we're not doing any slurry sealing the next couple of years. We're doing, well, we're just not doing any. So you didn't need it, I'm assuming, or didn't run out of money, or
we pretty much ran out of money. So a lot of those maintenance funds are actually overlapping with some of the bond projects. So, for example, when we do the work along Salamo Road, which is part of the 10th Street corridor work, we'll actually be using some of those maintenance funds to do a mill and overlay of the existing street while we're simultaneously using the bond funds to build the sidewalk or multi-use trail and curb work there. So that's one place where some of that money's going. A lot of the money's going to a lot of street reconstruction in this year's council just approved this year's street reconstruction or street maintenance projects, which is mostly almost like complete reconstruct of some very poor streets in the community that will be pretty much completely redone from base to surface locations, largely focused in the Robinwood and Bolton and Merrillhurst neighborhoods. And I anticipate in the next couple of years doing a lot of mill and fill kind of projects instead of slurry seal type projects as well. So
what's the difference between street maintenance projects and street pavement maintenance program?
Let's see if I can bring that up.
And the crack sealing separate too. I mean, isn't that all under the same umbrella?
Yeah, so street maintenance projects are pretty much, like you said, they're all maintenance for streets. Usually the street maintenance projects would be smaller, like patching items. We do quite a bit of just patching. We last year did that kind of patching, like on Rosemont Road between Carriageway and Salamo, whereas the street pavement maintenance program would really be like our annual road program. Probably need to do a better title there on that, but that would be like the big project, like the work like we're doing in the residential streets where we're completely redoing those roads or doing a significant mill and resurfacing or something like that. So, and we should probably title those something different so it's a little clearer. If you look in the actual books, when those get published, you'll see, like we did in the last five-year CIP, a little paragraph description of each one of those, as well as like a picture and breakdown and operating impacts. So those are generally the primary differences. I mean, those could all be lumped into one name, I suppose, and just show it all as maintenance. Right.
Thanks, Mike. Any other comments or questions on the CIP? It's an FYI item. Although, Lance, and this 2 years from now, I may not be here. I think it would be good 2 years from now, before it goes to the Budget Committee and the Council, that the Transportation Committee actually take a look at it and weigh in, because we got a lot of capital projects here that, whether our voice would matter or not, you know, we ought to take a look at it and perhaps provide some input. So, I mean, it's 2 years from now. Who knows if we'll all remember it, but I throw that out there for 2 years from now.
Yeah, and this year was particularly tough because of COVID. Our finance department really leads the dollar amounts on everything, and they were sort of behind the eight ball with other competing items in their bailiwick. Sure. So it's sort of, I do anticipate it being done differently, particularly with the new city manager coming on board and everything else this past year. That 2 years from now, you'll see a different process for that budget.
Okay. All righty. Are we ready to move on to the last item of our business, which is I was down there the other night, the Willamette Falls tripping hazard project. Take it away.
Sure. So, obviously members of the group wanted to have this on for discussion tonight, and I think that's a great topic. I mean, to give you sort of a sense of background, the project was really started several years ago. Our test bed scenario for that design style was really Rosemont Road between Salamo and really to the east, you know, is yeah, you head towards Wild Rose. You know, that corridor has been in place and built out since 2018, and with no tripping issues, in a very similar style of design, at least none that we were ever made aware of. And we had a lot of success there with kids going to and from school at the middle school, and a lot of active users there. So it's also based on designs that we saw out of Europe and design standards through the Crow Manual, which is a Dutch design manual, and everything that goes into that, as well as trying to integrate that with recommendations that we've seen from NACTO guidelines, which are, you know, stateside guides, as well as info that we've gotten from ODOT, and as well as our consulting team. So all that went into play, and of course, you know, we tried to do it all in the middle of international pandemic. We actually had all the curbs built out back in, I want to say, October, or closer to the end of last year. And then, of course, we've added in all the improvements, landscaping, everything over the winter, sort of closed out with some striping here this spring, went through the whole head-in, back-in parking debacle, and settled in on head-in parking. gets into a lot of what we consider heuristics and psychology of what people do. And we've learned a lot. And so currently we've got some temporary bollards out there just because that's what's available that we could get on short order. And what we found is people just don't look down. And pedestrians, regardless of color or type or what's there, often just walk without seeing where their feet are placed.
Well, yeah, I mean, I got out of my car to go actually look at them, and I had my phone in front of my face, and I tripped within like 3 seconds of getting out of my car, with the whole mission being to go down there and look at them.
Right.
So, like, yeah.
So, you know, and compare and contrast that with the prior design, where we had 5 to 6 foot wide sidewalks quite often in the corridor. If you go back to old Google photo images, a lot of people don't remember what it used to be down there. And then pair that with trying to accommodate outdoor dining for businesses and restaurants that were not allowed to have any indoor dining. The one thing people may not realize is I think West Linz downtown is the only downtown that didn't lose any of its restaurants to COVID. Every downtown, including downtown LO, lost restaurants to COVID. So, you know, I think there's a lot of lessons learned. Right now, and we've been working with the Main Street Committee, which is a group of area residents and some businesses down there. And there's been a lot of chatter back and forth on that. You know, trying to balance those needs while dealing with the topography of that location. I think people don't realize that there's a huge topography challenge right in that corridor if you don't, work in that corridor, where most of the businesses vary in elevation. Their finished floor elevations of those businesses are quite lower than the center of the street on one side of the street, but then simultaneously higher than the center of the street on the other side of the street. And then in some blocks, the businesses that are finished floor elevations on the same block can vary 3 feet and not be in coordination with the actual center of the road. This was all accommodated in the old design because the sidewalks were so narrow, most of the elevation changes occurred in the parking areas. So people didn't necessarily notice it. But when you widen out those sidewalks to 20 feet wide and then put a bike lane next to that where there was no bike accommodations before, it creates a lot of topographic and drainage challenges that we see there today. And so I think there's a couple of things that we're working on right now. One is to do some demo of some of the shorter curbs. So the 2-inch curb is actually a European standard for separation between bike and sidewalk heights, so that you create that separation. We also have, obviously, the different pavement types between the bike and the sidewalk areas, but we've made the bike so attractive to non-bikers that the pedestrians have sort of taken over that space. So we're working on modifying that curb elevation change. We actually used ODOT's standard mountable curb detail there, and that curb we're actually looking at trying to flatten or modify through curb cutting to see if that will be an appropriate solution. Other solution is to modify the bike lane itself, cut the asphalt and recontour it to better match the sidewalk elevation. And then on the 6-inch curb areas, those are bigger challenges because of drainage and meeting grades. In those areas, we're looking at either resloping the sidewalk, which takes away part of the sidewalk for outdoor dining, which is something that people, you know, obviously are not keen on. But I think probably in those 6-inch curb areas, we're probably looking at a combination of handrails or bollards and chains, or which are permanent fixtures that would be more decorative, and or sloping those areas of the sidewalk, depending on the use that's adjacent to those areas, to try and eliminate some of those concerns about tripping hazards. Because, like I said, regardless of color, people just aren't, they're not seeing where they're walking because of the nature of how people walk. And it's really not an ADA thing. There's handicap accessible spaces and design elements incurred throughout the corridor for handicap accessibility. It's really not so much the handicapped people that are tripping, it's the regular people, because they're just not seeing where they're walking. And using areas not really designed for pedestrians as a pedestrian space. So all those challenges are things that are new and unique and different that we encounter in a heavy pedestrian environment, which is very different from what we saw in the Rosemont corridor, where you have a very different pedestrian environment where you don't have crossing movements like you do with on-street parking. So we're actually incorporating a lot of that lessons learned into the Highway 43 project and into future phases of the Willamette Falls Drive project. Now it's really a timeline of how quickly can we move to retrofit those areas and coordinate with those adjacent businesses in the Main Street group to sort of fix those challenges that we've seen out there with some of the tripping hazards. So all in play and all in progress, and continuing to work out. Some of the interesting things that we've seen, of course, social media, is social media, but some of the challenges, like I think one of the solutions was paint the curb. We can certainly paint the curb. Unfortunately, we can't paint it yellow or red because yellow and red by state statute is no parking zones in the curb spaces for either no parking restriction or for a fire lane restriction. You can actually see that kind of curb over next to the Willamette Primary School and what that looks like in those no parking sections. So we don't want to use a color that's could potentially be conflicting with state laws on colored curbs.
We don't want to paint
Right, we don't want to do that. But we could paint a different color. Green is actually been used in other locations in this kind of context or environment in other areas.
Was okay, but it's just that I found it was 6 to 3 inches away from the actual edge where it drops off. And that was kind of the thing where I thought it could be improved at least.
Yeah.
People aren't looking, that's obvious, but at least can say it's been done.
Yeah, and green was actually, and the green-white combination was actually done because the MUTCD, which is the federal design guide, actually mandates that we use green and white in combination for bike lane designation. So we're actually sort of advanced, I think, beyond the federal guidelines because we're using a separated design. The federal guidelines actually envision most bike lanes on the street. And then if you look at some other locations that have been built in similar areas, there's a couple locations in Utah and Davis, California, I think, Salt Lake City area that have done this kind of design. And when they do that design, they actually step down. Well, first off, they have buildings that are higher than the street elevation, so it makes it a lot easier for consistent design. But secondly, they tend to step down the bike lane with a curb and then step back up with another curb where we have the pavers, and then step back down again with the curb to the parking. So you actually traverse in Salt Lake 3 curbs up and down where we're traversing 1 curb up and 1 curb down. So again, it's all this new and interesting and unique designs of these separated bike facilities that are paralleling pedestrian facilities, and how do we make the bike lane attractive to cyclists that don't want to bike in the street, but not so attractive to pedestrians that they're walking in the bike lane without, you know, paying attention to where they are. So, and then do that simultaneously with COVID and outdoor dining and, you know, all these other complications that we've occurred over the last year. So it's definitely a lot of challenges. This is actually one of the reasons why I wanted to build this project first as our first transportation bond-funded project, because we knew that we would encounter complications. We just didn't know what. And so we've actually anticipated that we were going to need to do sort of a phase two of something. We just didn't know what that might be. One of the things that we're doing right now is adding bollards, and bollards have long lead times. You know, fencing, all those things have very long lead times right now. We've actually started in the process of adding bollards to the driveways and the sidewalk, because the sidewalk is so wide that we've actually seen people driving down the sidewalk. And so people come in and out of the driveways, and instead of turning onto the street, they turn onto the sidewalk. And I've actually been on the street when somebody was driving their Suburban down the sidewalk in front of the cider house, directly adjacent to tables and chairs that are out there on the sidewalk. So we're adding some more vertical features to the sidewalk to try and do some of those improvements. We're also looking at, other comments that we've had are things like the benches and why aren't they facing the street? Well, they're not facing the street because we don't want people extending out into the bike lane. And so if we had them facing the street, they'd actually have to be on the far side of the sidewalk, closest to the property line and not close to the bike lane. And we tried to orient most of those benches to the side streets, so you actually get a view of down the side street, but create separation between the cycle space and the bike space or the pedestrian space. And we're also looking at potentially adding some more benches on that far side, so that people could actually sit and face the street if they so choose, or even face each other and have a conversation or something like that. So there's all these little intricacies and details that go into this that sometimes may not be perfectly obvious to somebody that's standing out on the street at the time. And I think those will continue to be fine-tuned and resolved. But it is unfortunately something that does take time. We go through a procurement process that takes time. And so we'll continue to probably be working on this for some time. I'd also mention we've also already lost one of our big trees out on the street. The tree at the corner of 11th was hit by an errant driver that went over the curb, went through a landscape bed, went across the crosswalk and curb and into the tree. And so we have seen that already on this corridor. You'll see a lot of the bike spaces and the curbs and the trees and the bike racks intentionally designed as buffer spaces, because even in the old design we had, in the original configuration, we had a lot of people hit the trees, hit the buildings actually, where they accelerated and went into the building when they were either trying to back up or pull in or pull out of parking in the old design. So we're trying to create more defensible spaces because we know people make mistakes, and so we're trying to accommodate for that in our design. So a lot of thought into that process.
Okay, any other questions on this? Sounds like a fun project. Okay, that would take us to the fourth item, capital projects update. Do we have anything in that area, Lance?
Capital projects update, I would mention that actually on the prior item, I will be actually a presenter at the National ITE Conference with our Main Street project as a case study in separated design, and not so much the details of the curb and the modifications that we're making, but how we got here, the process, the land, you know, the planning that went into it, and the reallocation of space. Whereas before, you know, the vast majority of space was allocated to automobiles, and how we've shifted that allocation down to really focus on pedestrian space, and then also providing some bike space that was previously zero in the corridor. So if anybody's planning on attending the virtual ITE conference, feel free to attend the session that I will be presenting on. In addition to that, for capital projects, like I said, the council just awarded our pavement maintenance project, which includes a number of streets with basically a full reconstruction. It'll get started here in this month, and hopefully by the end of this month, probably start construction actually in July. We also are still working with ODOT on the Highway 43 project. For those familiar with the ODOT process, we have made it to final DAP, which is their final design acceptance package, which is basically a 60% design on that work. And moving towards construction and right-of-way acquisition. A right-of-way acquisition will be this year, which are basically like sliver takes along the side for none of the actual improvements are, I think, in outside of the existing right-of-way for the most part, except for maybe a little bit at the corners. Most of the right-of-way is in temporary construction easements and slope easements, where we're modifying some of the things to transition driveways and stuff like that in the 43 improvement project. But that right-of-way process at ODOT takes a year, and so we're probably looking at construction to start on the 43 work in 2023. By the time we get through right-of-way utility and bidding in the ODOT process. You already heard about the I-205 project that we're coordinating with ODOT on right now. We're also coordinating with ODOT on the 10th Street work. We have to go through what's called their MAC, which is the Mobility Advisory Committee, which is really I don't know why it's called the freight. It should just be called the Freight Advisory Committee because it's all about freight. Probably doesn't have the same ring to it with those initials, but the freight lobby gets to review our design on the roundabouts and the improvements around the I-205 10th Street interchange. We've already been through them once. We're actually going through our initial screening. We're going through a final screening here this summer, and then hopefully we can continue towards final design of that corridor over this winter and be out to bid and construction for construction in the next season. Also looking on that corridor at accelerating the utility work, possibly as a separate bid package to get the conduits in the ground early, where we're removing and undergrounding all of the overhead utilities along 10th from 8th up to Willamette Falls Drive, and then also undergrounding all the utilities along Willamette Falls Drive in the 10th Street area up to almost 11th. So all of that will be working. We found working with CenturyLink, who is now Lumen, I think is their new name, and Comcast has been a real challenge. They have delayed their work on the existing Willamette Falls Drive work for several months and are just now doing some of the work to begin to remove the existing power poles on Willamette Falls Drive. I'm hoping to see those poles on Willamette Falls Drive from 11th to 16th completely removed here in the next month or two. So all continuing to move forward. People may not realize we are still working actually on the Willamette Falls Drive project from 10th to 16th with continued work, punch list items and other things. So I think that's basically all the big capital projects in a nutshell. I'd be happy to answer any questions if anybody has any on that.
You have any questions for Lance on our capital project update? Okay, good job, Lance. At this point, we move to board discussion and announcements. Anybody have something they want to talk about? Lance, one thing came to me, I get from TPAC, was the congestion pricing study. And it's pretty involved, and I read or skimmed most of it because it's a pretty intense thing. Is the council expecting some kind of a, are they going to weigh in on it? Are they going to give information on how it affects West Lynn and what we think about it? Have you been asked to look at it and, you know, is it something we should be looking at and commenting on?
I have not. Actually, that probably, and let me grab this from my table here. Leads into another item. I have not on the congestion pricing. That's, I think, a largely a Metro-driven project where they're sort of doing their work in parallel with the tolling work that ODOT's doing and really talking about congestion pricing for all the freeways in the region. And that really is really another word for tolling, in my opinion. Just different strategies on what that means. They have not. I think that's pretty much in the realm of, you know, Metro and the Metro groups. I mean, certainly the city's a member of Metro. We participate through C4 and our member association communities here in Clackamas County. C4 is our Clackamas County group that really is made up of elected officials that comment and provide feedback to Metro on stuff like that. So I don't think the city specifically tasked city staff with reviewing that, but instead left that, I think, primarily to the C4 group and all the cities of the Clackamas County region to have a coordinated response.
The reason I bring it up is one of the solutions which congestion pricing can drive an impact on is if you price the freeways, and they show it in the study, you tend to drive traffic onto the local roads. Since we have I-205 going through our community and we already have an issue on Willamette Falls Drive, the expectation will be, I guess you can only plug up Willamette Falls Drive so far and you can't plug it up anymore. But the fact is, you may get a third lane on I-205. You may price it such that no one wants to use it because they're going to use our side streets as well. And so it seems to me that if that's an issue, the city would want to weigh in on that, particularly to our Metro Councilor, who actually happens to live here, I believe, in the Willamette area. Mm-hmm. And so we'll be impacted as much as anybody by what may happen. So I guess to that extent, if I'll take another look at it, and if I see something, I'll drop you a line and we can decide if that's something this committee needs to weigh in on. But I mean, it could have an impact on our community, good and bad, you know.
Yeah, and like you mentioned, we do have a good rep at Metro with one of our own local residents being elected to the Metro Board, which is a good thing. There's just so many ways that those things can go. I mean, we haven't really even with ODOT started talking about mitigation techniques. There's a ton of things that could happen. I mean, you could actually toll, side streets as well. I mean, there's nothing that prohibits that kind of tolling. And tolling today is different than what people may think. It's not coins in the bucket anymore. It's really digital. It's completely digitized. And you can toll based on regions, and you can zone digitally to where people may pay a toll that go through an area but don't have a destination in that area. So, there's just so many different layers of complexity that add to that. I think that's why, you see some of these studies just sort of hitting the highlights and identifying some of those issues, like, off-tracking into local streets, but not really addressing how they mitigate those things, which is what I consider sort of the next level of digitized tolling in the modern era. I've always said, well, we could just toll ourselves, on Willamette Falls Drive. I'm just waiting for the transponders to show up so that we don't have to issue our own. That becomes a whole nother issue, right? That's not something that we're advocating. I don't want to put that in people's minds. But that's what I'm saying. There's just so many variations that could happen that it makes it a very complex conversation. The one thing I did want to mention, since you brought that up, is the council did do its goals. That's posted to the city's website. I will be working on sending the group the goals sheet, and there are a few transportation items on there that I would like to maybe bring up at our next meeting for an agenda topic, is how to address those goals. And I think in looking at some of these goals, they're sort of longer term, so it's not necessarily things that are to be done by the end of this calendar year, but really things to work on, I think, over this next two-year budget cycle. So.
Okay. Excellent. Any other announcements or discussion from board members? Okay, I see the seven of us. I don't see anybody on the call that's the public, so I'm assuming we don't have any public comments.
One other thing I mentioned, Greg, I forgot to mention that I was thinking of, since I see Kim on the call, is we do have all of our equipment in for our electric vehicle charging facility improvements at City Hall. We are planning on installing an electric vehicle charging level 2 charger that would be accessible to the public right outside City Hall here in the parking lot, as well as level 2 charging facilities in our garage for our own fleet. We do have a couple of electric vehicles on order and for delivery. Hopefully we'll take possession of those soon. And we are dialed in for some additional electric vehicles, namely the new F-150 from Ford. So we're on that pre-order list as well. So the city is moving into that path for future vehicles and fleet, and slowly making some headway there.
Is there a charge to charge your car at City Hall?
There will be a charge. We haven't worked out the details and logistics of all that quite yet. I would anticipate it would be basically to cover the cost of the electricity.
Right.
And that all that work is in partnership and coordination with PGE and a Drive Change grant fund that we received from them.
Okay. Anything else then? If not, I'll adjourn the meeting. Our next one is scheduled for July the 22nd, and you think it'll be a face-to-face, Lance?
I think so.
All right. One more little screen. Okay, everybody, thanks for participating. We'll see everybody next month at City Hall. Good night.
Good night. Oh.